We'll get to today's podcast in just a moment. It's made possible each day by KPP Financial, and we want you to know about our newest investment program. It's called Disciplined Equity. KPP has developed a strategy that filters through thousands of stocks based on business quality, chart strength, and underlying value, focusing on only high-quality companies listed on U.S. exchanges. To find out more about it, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Investments tab. And now, InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody. And today is Friday, January 22nd, and you're listening to InvestTalk. And thank you for listening. I appreciate that. Now, let's start off with the words of Robert Arnott. He's the founder of and chairman of Research Affiliates, a subsidiary to a sub-advisor to PIMCO. So he knows what he's talking about. It seems especially appropriate what he has said, and this is his quote: "Investing in what is comfortable is rarely profitable. Investing in what is comfortable is rarely profitable." Now, our InvestTalk mission is to help you navigate the challenging times we're in, and providing information and answering some questions or bringing you some new ideas and some encouragement, whether it's in investing or managing your own personal finances, your 401k, or anything, your insurance, anything financial, we'd be happy to talk about, your real estate. And now, investing can be very challenging, as you probably have seen. And globally, it is, you know, it's getting very ugly out there. Our markets, you know, as challenging as they've been this month, January, not nearly as bad as other places around the world. So you need to keep an eye on your portfolio. Now, we suggest that you always, you know, you look at it periodically and you adjust your weightings. You know, and depending on how much longer you have till retirement, how much weighting should be in the market versus out of the market. We're all getting older. We can't necessarily all be aggressive. I mean, I don't think that's a prudent thing. So you have to take a look at your portfolio. Now, of course, the best strategy, as always, is, you know, to have a long-term outlook. The most successful portfolio managers have a common characteristic, and that is they are long-term strategies. Now, it's simple. When's the last time you've heard a very successful day trader that's been around for many, many years? Have you ever seen one? Ever heard of one? No. No, you don't. That's just because the market works well long-term. But you as an individual have to decide how much exposure you want to the market and what exposure you don't want to the market. That's always a difficult question. That's why we have different programs, you know, different portfolios to adjust to what you want. You know, what kind of exposure, how much risk do you want? And that's something you have to look at all the time. Now, you know, if you're looking for cheap investments, you might want to look at international funds because there's a lot of markets that got really beat up. Now, of course, they can get more beat up, but they've been really beat up. So now all of a sudden you have some pretty good valuations out there. But I would stay away from countries that are fiscally irresponsible, like maybe Greece or Spain. Yeah, that they maybe even Italy. Yeah, they have some pretty bad structural problems from their economy when it comes to debt. Now, reallocating your portfolio is simple. You know, just you know, it just needs some knowledge. You just need, and if you have trouble with that, give me a call. I'll help you with it. So, do you have questions about asset allocation? Let's go to the line. Let's go ahead and go get on our phones. 888-99-CHARTERS, our anytime number. I hope you feel that you're part of the discussion, so give me a call.
This is Jamie from beautiful Boston, Massachusetts. On Wednesday, there was a statement made on the show that indexing does not work for bond funds. Could you please explain why and what a new investor might do otherwise to better fill their bond portion of their portfolio? Thanks.
Well, the problem with bond funds, this is our issue. They work great, and you're going to look back at bond funds and over go do a 10-year, 15-year look at returns of bond funds. You're going to say, look how good those are. Because bond funds work really good when interest rates are flat or going down. So we're suggesting that over the next 10, 15 years looking forward, interest rates are not going to fall. Now, I don't necessarily think they're going to go up anytime soon. I don't think, you know, the Fed is raising rates, but over long time, long periods, we've probably seen the bottom of interest rates. So we're saying that buying bond funds, please don't misunderstand this. We like buying bonds. If you want to be a bond investor, you buy them, you hold the maturity, you know, they go back to par, you get your money back. Nothing wrong with that. But bond funds, their net asset value goes up and down with interest rates. If interest rates are rising, the net asset value goes down. You still get your dividend yield or your bond yield out of that bond fund. You still get it. But what good is that? What good is a 3 or 4 or 5% bond yield if the value of the bond goes down 5, 10% a year? You're still losing money. So we think indexing the bond funds are not going to work. Buying just a group of bond funds, not going to work. If you cannot buy individual bonds, and this is difficult for individual investors because you have to buy a number of them to spread the risk. And most people can't do that. And if you do, you might get the worst ones offered to you by your bond desk at your, because you're not big enough. You're small, but they don't make much money on bonds. So no one wants to sell, you know, no one wants to do trading of your $10,000, $50,000 worth of bonds. It's not worth it to them. They make so little money. So it's difficult. But if you need to have some bond exposure, you make sure they're short term right now. And look how bad, stay away from junk bonds. Have you seen how bad those have operated? They have done terrible. And we talked about this a year and a half ago. We had a seminar on this, on junk bonds, and be very careful about junk bonds. And, you know, no one thought that there were any problems with them. And then almost all last year, they did nothing but fall. So stay away from 888-99-CHARTER is our number. Let's go to Luke in Alabama. How you doing, Luke?
Hey, I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for the call. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. I'm a 21-year-old. I just graduated college in December.
Congratulations.
And I have thank you. And I have a full-time job, and I make a little over $40,000.
Okay.
And I have about $10,000 worth of cash in the bank and everything. Mm-hmm. And I just want to know what you think I should do from here. I know I'm at my employer match. My dad was telling me I should do a Roth, 401k or whatever, and get my employer match and everything like that. Should I get maxed out my Roth right now? I really don't live off of that much money and everything like that.
Yeah, the smartest thing is if you max out your Roth contributions now, you're so young at 21, if you can get that Roth up fast, you have so many years for it to grow that you'll not have to pay any taxes on that growth. So yeah, the best thing for you to do is to max out that Roth. Max out the Roth. If you can and you have the ability to do it, the best time to do it is when you're young. Now, don't wait till my generation who are still trying to put I'm the baby boomer generation. We are broke. A lot of us are broke, don't have hardly any money saved up, and we're going to keep working until we die. You know, that's just all the way it's going to do. But you, Luke, being so young, yeah, you want to max out your Roth, and you'll be so much wealthier in your generation than we are in our generation.
Okay. Maybe when I get older, you know, when I'm 30 or so, would that be a good time to start putting a lot of money in my 401k too?
If your employer's matching, you always want to get all that money you can get. Yeah, and you always want, that's free money, and you always want that. Luke, appreciate the call. We're a little bad reception there, but thank you for the call. Appreciate that. We're excited to announce our next wealth conference, everybody. It's set for Saturday, February 20th in San Jose. Save the date. Survival and opportunities in a volatile market. Isn't that kind of apropos? Think we're volatile enough? That's why we decided this one. I expect this conference will be pretty full. I hope so, anyways. So it might be a good idea to sign up early. And if you do sign up early, you get a discount. You'll save $10 off the entry fee of $45. Save the date, Saturday morning, February 20th, San Jose. Sign up will be starting Monday. Okay, is it time for worried investors to start betting on hedge funds? You know what hedge funds are? Should you invest in them? You know, are they going to work better with the weak market that we're in? That's going to be one of our talking points today. Also, how to tell if the market's hit a bottom. Have we hit a bottom? Do you think we've hit a bottom? And the likelihood of the Fed to stay on course. In other words, remember they raised rates in December and they said they're going to continue. What's the likelihood of that? And are they going to do it at the next meeting, which is coming up? Or maybe in the next one after that, which is in March? Things you can do today that will make you richer. That's going to be the last talking point. Yesterday, I wanted to mention, oh, by the way, the market was up 210 points on the Dow, 119 on the NASDAQ, and 38 on the S&P. So the S&P and the NASDAQ were up over 2% today. Nice little bounce. But yesterday, someone called me up about OIL, the ETF that tracks crude prices, and why did it go down so much when oil prices rebounded yesterday? And I was kind of not quite sure and said that oil did come back later, was up strong in the latter part of the day. Well, OIL is not an ETF, exchange-traded fund. It's an ETN, an exchange-traded note. And the difference is that it's a closed-end fund versus an opened-end fund. We've talked about those before. And closed-end funds can sell at a premium or discount to the holdings inside them. And OIL had a 20% premium to the underlying index. So what happened is a lot of that premium got eaten up. That's why it went down, even though oil went up. So just remember, you got to look at, if you're dealing with ETNs, those are closed-end funds, meaning there's finite number of stocks, meaning they can sell at a premium or discount to the assets they hold or the index they track, depending on how popular they are. Whereas an ETF trades right at the net asset value of the holdings or the index that they're tracking, right at that price. So that was the difference. And if I was quicker on the uptake, I would have picked that up right then, but I did not see it as being an ETN instead of an ETF. Just wanted to clarify that for everybody. So the market had a pretty good bounce today, and it looked like the last couple of days it wanted to bounce, but we didn't really get it till today. And is it over? Are we over? Is this the bottom of the market? And I would say this might be a short-term bottom, but we didn't really have total capitulation. Total capitulation means everybody throws in the towel and gives up, and the stock prices crash, and volume really spikes. We did have lots of pretty good volume, but no spike in the volume. We also didn't have a spike in the VIX, the volatility index, which is also known as the fear gauge. For instance, in August, the volatility index spiked up to 52. And here, this time, the highest it's been in January, and a close is like 27. So there wasn't much fear, wasn't enough fear in my mind. And also, stock prices aren't that cheap. The valuations are not cheap. They're not expensive, but they're not cheap. So I'm going to say we've hit a short-term bottom, but not the bottom for this year. That's my opinion, but I think that's what the technical read is. As I say, this isn't your grandfather's real estate market. It's much more dynamic. It's much more local. If you have real estate decisions to make soon, why don't you give me a call? Talk to us. Talk to Justin. Talk to me. I've been dealing with real estate for years and years since I was in my 20s. I bought my first property. 888-99-CHARTER is our anytime number. 888-992-4278.
Hi, Steve. This is Dave from Boston, the podcast listener. I'm looking at a stock, LLTC. Wanting your opinion. Thank you.
This is Linear Technology Corporation, LLTC, out of Milpitas, California. manufacture standard linear ICSs for industrial aerospace, military, automotive, telecommunication, computer, and consumer markets. It's almost a $10 billion company, pays a nice dividend of 3.1%, makes money, has made money for years and years and years, and, you know, it hasn't been growing, but it's pretty consistent. They're going to make they made $2.12 in 2015. In 2016, it's only going to be $1.99, then $2.70 the year after that. So there's not a lot of growth to it. I'm not impressed. It's a good company. It's a solid company. But sales have been shrinking every quarter for almost 2 years. Sales. Earnings have been pretty steady. But sales have been shrinking. And that is the kind of thing that I don't like to see. They don't have any debt. They have a nice dividend. Mutual funds have been steady owners of it, not sellers. So this is the kind of stock you want to buy when it's cheap. And, you know, it's not cheap. It's trading at 20 PE. It's a $41.73 stock, up $2.78 a day. But if it's going to make $2.17, you know, a 20 PE means it's $42 stock. Well, 20 PE is high when you don't have growth. That's too expensive. So I think it's too expensive. So I wouldn't be a buyer of it. It has to really come down strong to become a value play before I get into it. Unless there is some kind of catalyst for some strong growth, you look at this more as a value play. And I don't think it's cheap enough for a value play yet. LLTC, Linear Technology. Good, solid company. Really good company, but just not too much money for it. Now, should you be buying or thinking about getting into hedge funds? And I'm going to give you a quick answer. No. First, a traditional regular hedge fund. You have to make $200,000 a year. You have to have $1 million net worth, excluding your property. And the absolute minimum for a regular hedge fund investment is $500,000 to $1 million. So first of all, probably it won't, we can't, it's not going to be suitable for you guys, you and me. Now, they do have new, what they call alternative funds, okay? And these are pretending to be hedge funds, but they're basically mutual funds that try to act like hedge funds. And I will say this, the evidence is not very good. These are not very good funds. They have not been yet. Could they be? Sure. I don't think it's something that you and me need to worry about or get into. You know, they usually buy very illiquid assets. That, you know, they try different, sometimes very exotic investments. If you're going to get into one of these alternative funds, make sure you understand what they do. And most people won't understand what they do, because it can be a lot of financial engineering involved. So the answer is stay away from hedge funds and alternative funds. Leave that to the ultra-wealthy people. And I don't know if you know this, but hedge funds go out of business all the time. All the time. Either they are hugely successful or they're out of business. Because that's what they're swinging for the fences. That's what they're designed to do. And if they miss, they go out of business. They all frequently do. There's been some hedge funds have been around a number of years, but not that many. It's just not a good solid investment for most people. First of all, it's not available. Second of all, with the new mutual funds, everybody, you know, they're trying to cash in on the popularity of hedge funds, and everybody thinks they can make big killings, get rich quick. That doesn't work. Never does work. We're here for you, beginner, experienced investor, any one of you. We'd love to hear from you. 888-99-CHART. If you're a podcast listener, you can still get to us. Just ask your question. Leave it on. We'll play it on the next program. We're live, 4 to 5 Pacific time.
Hey, thanks for your show. Thinking about buying Union Pacific, UNP. Wondering at what price would you get into it, and what do you think about the Union Pacific? Thank you very much, Steve.
Now, Union Pacific, we talked about railroads yesterday. Union Pacific provides rail transport for 31,000. And remember what we talked about? Well, what's the problem? Why are their stocks all getting crushed? And we said, I said it was probably due to oil. Number one, there's several reasons. First, when oil's real cheap, that means gasoline's real cheap. That means trucking is more popular than rail. When it's expensive to ship things by trucks, they start shipping things by rail. Also, oil is, we have coal companies being beat up, and there's a lot of coal being transported by rail. And everybody hates coal these days. Transporting oil by rail, we have a glut of oil, so, and the prices are so low, so the rail companies can't make money on that. At some point, they're going to be so inexpensive that you have to do it. And Union Pacific is a really good company. I think you just have to wait for it to trade sideways and to move up, and then consider getting into it. So I don't have a specific price, because there's no support. It's still falling. You're listening to Invest Talk. Coming up on the next half hour, when do you take Social Security? Talked about that many times. 888-99-CHARTER is our anytime number. You can call right now.
We'll look ahead now to our next Invest Talk for Monday, January 25th. Examples of different kinds of diversification and how they can reduce risk, the pros and cons of a diversified portfolio. That's one of our talking points on the next Invest Talk. And thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. You're listening to Invest Talk for Friday, January 22nd, made possible each day by KPP Financial. We're announcing our next wealth conference. It's set for Saturday, February 20th in San Jose. Survival and opportunities in a volatile market. Save the date. Early bird signup begins on Monday.
888-99-CHART. The Federal Reserve hiked rates in December, right? They hiked rates in December, and ever since that time, the market took a dive. And they only hiked it up a quarter point, right? I mean, it's not from zero to a quarter point. Not much. But it's not the actual rate itself. It's the change in direction, because we had so many years of no rate hike. Well, the Federal Reserve is going to meet again here fairly soon. And their language of what they're going to do has not changed. They have, you know, you've heard that they're still on course to raise rates this year. And I really don't think they're going to change any of their verbiage. They're not going to raise the rates this next meeting. That's just not in the cards with the market being so volatile. The next meeting after this one that's coming up shortly is in March. Okay, so they're about 6 weeks apart or so, 5 or 6 weeks apart. That meeting is the one that they could raise the rates, but my gut feeling is that they're not going to. But they're not changing their tune at this point. They are not. Because they desperately would like to have higher rates, even though we're probably going to have not a very pleasant GDP number for the fourth quarter coming out next week. We have a stock market that's fallen sharply. We have no indication of any inflation in our system, and they want inflation. We want some. There's absolutely no reasons to raise rates, but they didn't have any reason to raise rates in December either, other than rates were too low. See, they want to fight the next recession. They also don't want to cause the next recession. Raising rates may cause the next recession. Remember, one of the leading economic indicators that came out, that report came out for December today, and it was down 0.2%. One of the leading economic indicators is the stock market itself, the S&P 500. And it's down, 10% this month? So, I don't know, 8%, 9%, somewhere in there. So that the leading economic indicators report is made up of 10 different statistics, and one of them is the market, is stock market itself. The stock market generally goes down prior to any evidence that we're in a recession. The bond market generally goes down before the stock market. And did you notice that the bond market's been falling for over a year? So, especially junk bonds. Overall bond market, take a look at that. Yeah, same thing. Not as steeply, but yeah, it's fallen over a year. So the bond market leads the stock market. The stock market leads the economy. But the problem is that's not always true. See, don't take any one of these things and say, okay, point to that. That means this is going to happen. I wished it was that easy. It's not. So just that it tends to be true, not always true. You know, so don't take everything, everybody says with a grain of salt and make your own decisions. Invest Talk is a two-way conversation, but if you have a question between programs, of course, you can always ask, and we'll play the question on the next Invest Talk. 888-99-CHART.
Two quick questions, if I may. First, on an inherited Roth IRA, is the beneficiary required to take required minimum distributions? And my second question, on your managed portfolios, do you use a certain group of retail mutual funds, or are you using institutional mutual funds? Thank you.
Okay. Inherited Roth IRA. Well, if you have an inherited regular IRA, I know there is required that you have to start taking distributions and you can spend them over 5 years. But a Roth is something a little bit different, and I don't know the answer to that. I don't know. Because a Roth, you know, if a normal Roth, you don't have to take distributions at all. But if you inherit one, do you have to? Well, since there was no tax with the regular Roth IRA, I don't know why it would matter whether you have to take them out or not, because there wouldn't be any tax. So I mean, I could give you an educated guess, but then remember, I'm guessing, and I don't like the guess. And I'm going to have to ask an accountant that question. I have a feeling that you don't owe any taxes on it, therefore, you could take it all at one time, or you can take it whenever you want to. You can do whatever you want. But that's what I think. But then remember, there's capital gains, and if it's in a Roth, there's no tax on capital gains. But when you inherit something, you get a stepped up value. There's all those, there's issues that I'm just not sure of. So, and we do not, in our managed accounts, our stock managed account, we only buy stocks. We don't buy mutual funds. In our income account, we buy bonds and stocks, but we don't buy mutual funds. And in our mutual fund program, we buy regular mutual funds. No low, no transaction fee mutual funds. No low meaning no commissions. No transaction fee means it costs us nothing to get in and out. You can buy and sell them anytime you want. We also don't have any holding periods. We can get in and out anytime we want to without having to hold on to them if we didn't want to. If we wanted to do one for a trade, for instance, we could do that. So I hope that answered those questions. 888-99-CHART. It's time for Invest Talk Personal, everybody. The day-to-day money decisions that have a lasting impact. When do you plan to start taking Social Security? Now, we talked about this many times. You can take it at 66. Most people, that's the retirement age now for Social Security. Or you can take it at later, 70. You have to start taking it at 70 and a half, basically. But if you wait those years, you get 8% increase, monthly increase every year. You know, every year, 8% increase. So that by the time you're 70, your assets, your Social Security payments grow 8% a year. Now, we also talked about you really should file and suspend at age 66. But you don't have to, by the way. You can wait till age 70 and then file. But it's smarter to file and suspend at age 66. Why? Well, just in case. If you didn't do that, it's an issue. For instance, let's say you don't want to take benefits and you file at 66. But say at 68, something happens and you get ill, or you suddenly need the income at age at 68. Well, now you have the option to claim it because you suspended it, but now you can claim it. And if you have filed at 66, you have two options for receiving your benefits. You can either begin receiving benefits immediately at your current level at age 68, or you can receive your benefits retroactively from when you filed. In other words, you get a big check. But then the monthly checks will be set up at age 66. So it'll be much less. if you don't file, you don't get those options. So not that you would use them, but you certainly, why not take advantage of the possibility that you might use them? It kind of takes on a little air of an insurance policy, locking in a valuable tool there. CNBC has an excellent article on this. You can find the link on investtalk.com right below the today's talking point link. And that's InvestTalk Personal. If you have a question on the topic, or any topic financial, give me a call, 888-99-CHART.
When you're an InvestTalk insider, you have access. There are easy-to-read informational one-sheets on annuities, wills and trusts, retirement programs, life insurance, an updated ETF list, and Steve has updated sector ETF watch lists. Available to all InvestTalk insiders. You can sign up for this free InvestTalk Insider program on InvestTalk.com.
Hi, this is Joseph from the Bay Area, and I have a question. What is your opinion about HP, Steve? Thank you for your service.
HP is Helmerich and Payne. Helmerich and Payne, HP. Out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, they are engaged in contract drilling of oil and gas wells, primarily in North and South America. A driller. And, of course, all the drillers got killed, and so did, you know, all oil companies basically got hurt. The ones that held up the best were the integrated companies, as, you know, I suggested a few months ago that those are the companies you were going to, should buy. If you're going to buy oil, buy those. HP is a very good driller. There's nothing wrong with this company. They're going to lose 46 cents a share this year, then 19 cents a share next year. And why? Because no one's drilling for oil. They pay a 5.8% dividend. They have very strong cash flow of $8.63 a share. So they're not going to go out of business. It's a $5 billion company. They don't have hardly any debt, but sales are suffering. Now, they were up nicely today, but all oil by oil prices spiked. Did you see that oil price went up 9% today to $32.25 in their barrel? Remember, it got down to like $27.28. And I even mentioned yesterday, I said, I guess I'm wrong. I thought it would hold around $30. I said that yesterday, and I said, and I admitted that I was wrong because it went down to $27 or something. Well, now it's back up to $32 and one day later, up almost over 9%. Anyways, I think this is a very strong company. If you have lots of patience, it will work fine. You will get a good dividend, and the company will come back. But it might take a long time because we have a glut of oil, and the oil drillers are not going to be very strong for a long time. So it wouldn't be an area I would invest in right now. I just, you know, if you are going to go into it, be very, very light. Don't get a full position, you know. So be very, very careful. I like the integrated oil. Big oil companies better. I've been saying that for weeks and weeks. Helmerich and Payne, HP. Let's go to Ruby in Santa Clara. How are you doing, Ruby?
Hi, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
This is regarding the stock Gilmore Page.
What was the symbol?
Sorry about that. I'm not up on my mind.
I'm having the connection is really bad on my end, so I'm not trying to hear. I'm not hearing the stock. Can you hear that, guys? That engineer? No, Rabbi, you're going to have to call back because I'm not understanding the stock that you're asking about. Unless you have the symbol, I appreciate the call. Thank you. Sorry about that, everybody. 888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. So what are the things you could do right now that can make you rich or make you richer? What can you do now to make you richer? Simple things. Nothing. Every one of these things you could do, it's easy, really easy. How about go seeing a doctor and make sure you're healthy? Because if you're healthy, you can work. If you can work, you can make money. Okay, so how about maybe going and seeing a doctor to make sure your health is good? Or how about going to sleep earlier? This will help make you rich, be sharper, be more energetic. How about making an extra payment on a loan? I don't care if it's a mortgage loan or a car loan. Make an extra payment. Get the payments off your back sooner. And how about increasing your participation for your 401k IRA just by 1, maybe 2 or 3%? Just a little. This little. And finally, how about eating at home some more often? Be a lot cheaper. And really, do you need that Starbucks coffee every 2 or 3 cups a day at Starbucks? You need it every day. You can't make your own coffee. Because it's pretty expensive. It adds up. So those are my suggestions. Of course, they're pretty simple to do. You should be able to do it. Anyways, cutting Social Security benefits, by the way, looks kind of inevitable, or taxes have to go up. One or the other. So we're going to talk about that a little bit more if I can today. Let's talk to Paul in San Jose. How you doing, Paul?
Hey, Steve. Long time listener.
Thank you.
Love your show. Would like to know what's going on with Bank of America. You'd think because interest rates are kind of come up a little bit that the stock would be going up, but it seems to be going down, and I really don't understand it. And I just bought some and lost a little bit of money, but that's part of investing, I guess. And I want your expert opinion.
Okay, Bank of America, everybody knows who they are, BAC. And it's not Bank of America is all by itself, Paul. It's if you look at any major bank, they're all getting killed. So it's not Bank of America. Don't think of, what's wrong with Bank of America? It's the banking area of the stock market is getting crushed. And why is that? Well, there's worried about debt defaults, not just here in the United States, but all over the world. Huge debt's been taken out. We all know that. Here in the United States, it's a more of a worry about the big loans, junk bond loans by, small oil companies in the Midwest. We're talking billions of dollars, not just a little bit of money, billions of dollars of loans that look like they're going to be defaulted on. But like Bank of America and Citigroup and these big international companies, it's more worry about not just here in the United States, it's everywhere in the world. That the numbers are, the defaults are going to start rising fast in 2016, and everybody is scared. Now, that might be too much for fear, because Bank of America is a pretty solid company. There might be too much fear about this, but that is what the fear is, and that explains why they're getting beat up so much here in January. And the default rates are going to spike. Paul, but I like Bank of America. I don't know if I would give up on it. It's going to pay a decent dividend, and it's a really strong company long term. It'll be fine, but it might be a bad year for 2016 for banks. We're down to our last segment, everybody. We want to talk to you. Give us a call. 888-99-CHART.
I have a 401k from a former employer, and it's just sitting there. I'm not putting anything in it, just sitting there. So I'm wondering, should I put that into an IRA? I see that there are all different types of IRAs. Which one would be the best choice to pick? I'm 44. Great show.
Okay, if you have an old 401k from an old employer, the smartest thing to do is roll that into an IRA. There's only two kinds of IRAs. There's a Roth IRA and a regular IRA. If you roll a regular 401k into a Roth IRA, all that money you roll is going to be taxed the year you do it. Income tax is going to be added to your income. So you wouldn't want to do that, probably. You want to roll the old 401k into a regular IRA. Called a rollover IRA, but it's a regular IRA. And then you have complete control of what you want to do with the money. You can buy index, you can put it in a bank if you want. You can hire someone like me to manage it. You can do it yourself. You can roll it over into a mutual fund. You can buy whatever you want. You can buy stocks, bonds, mutual funds, depending on where you roll it over to. So that's the smartest thing to do. Roll it over into an IRA. If it's a Roth 401k, which is probably not the case because they're fairly new, then you roll it into a Roth IRA. Regular 401k, regular IRA. Okay? Did you see the existing home sales report this morning, by the way? Now, earlier in the week, we had the housing starts, you know, new construction. And it was 1.15 million annualized units. And it was the month before, it was 1.18. So it was a little bit lower. And the permits were good. And that's a leading economic indicator. The permits for new construction going forward. This morning, we had the existing home sales. That's think of a house that's already built and they're selling them. People are buying and selling those houses. We had the highest number on record. It was up 14.3% from the month before, from 4.76 million to 5.46 million. Now, they expected it to go up, but not necessarily that much. Now, this is for December. Now, one of the things that could have been pushing this is that the Fed raising rates. So people waiting and waiting and waiting around, then decide to better get into the market before the interest rates rise, the mortgage rates rise, and then the Federal Reserve raises the rates. So then you have a rush. I think that might explain some of this. But both reports are fairly strong. The existing housing report is pretty, you know, definitely strong. The new construction was fairly strong. So real estate is still okay right now. Hopefully, it will be a net positive for 2016 for our economy. I think it will. You know, we had weak numbers in the fourth quarter being reported, especially for December. Weak economic numbers. And we're going to have the fourth quarter GDP come out, and that's going to come out on January 29th. The forecast now is for 1.1%. The previous forecast, by the way, was 2%. And that was just the quarter before that. So we're looking at 1.1% as forecast. So that tells you that the fourth quarter is pretty weak. If we get 1.1%, could be, you know, I'm thinking it might be a bit below that, I think. But no, who knows? But even at 1.1, if it even comes out near what they are, that is pretty weak economic growth. Pretty weak. And what I find fascinating is they have estimates for the second quarter, 2.3%, and for the third quarter, 2.5%. These forecasters are always optimistic. I mean, think about just for this most fourth quarter, just the third quarter, they said the fourth quarter was going to be 2%. Now they're saying it's going to be 1.1. Just in 3 months, you know, so they miss a lot, the numbers. So don't ever think that any of these things are written in stone. And you realize that we are in the middle of earnings season. Have you heard a lot about earnings season? Probably not. Not been on everybody's mind. Our time is up. Save the date, Saturday, February 20th in San Jose. That's our next Saturday Morning Wealth Conference, Survival and Opportunities in a Volatile Market. And we have been in a very volatile market. And we have early bird signups starting Monday. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, thank you for listening today.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.